Blog Talk Radio.
Member name. She's been a long-time member of Groomer Talk. And, of course, she's got a long history. I was looking today. I was amazed. It's now 5 years that Debbie has been a GroomWise.com blogger with us. Just amazing how the years have passed by. She's also written articles for Groom Team USA newsletter, the NEPGP, which is New England Pet Grooming Professionals newsletter, the Groomers Gazette, and she publishes her own website, Grooming Smarter. Her blog has been nominated for a Barclay Honors Award for Best Blog of the Year in 2011 and 2012. Some of the topics she covers include wet clipping, dematting, using snap-on combs, and grooming the Cocker Spaniel. Quite often she does really spice up her video blogs with neat videos, and I think it's just one of the best resources in our collection of blogs at GroomWise. It's certainly every groomer should take a look at. Before we get started with Debbie, I want to let you know the Wall manufacturer has come out with a new clipper called the Motion, and you can find out more about that at the message board. And in fact, we're having another one of our long list of Pay It Forward contests. You can win a Wall Motion for yourself, and you can pay one forward to someone in need or an association in need. Please come by. It's easy to enter. You just have to post on the board. You're in the drawing. Nothing more. How much easier can it get? We've been giving away now about 30 clippers in the last couple years, and guess what? Coming up is October. We're going to be giving away another Wall product. Yep, and I'm not going to tell you what this one is. It's not the Motion. It's something new. You're going to have to please come by and check it more. So let me go in here and see if Debbie's on the line with us. Debbie, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Oh, great. It's working well. I can hear you real well. That's wonderful. You know, we've talked about doing this for a long time with our bloggers, and with this new format, we're doing it. I just want to say thanks for, you know, did you hear me mention it? 5 years now. I was going to guess maybe 3 years we've done the blog. 5 years.
Yeah, I went through the other day looking for something, and I found it back in 2009, and I was like, there is no way I've been writing this long. But, yep, it was the fall of 2008.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Wow. Well, there's a wealth
surprised
of knowledge
I
that you put there.
I'm really surprised I haven't run out of topics yet.
Don't. We've got to keep this. We're on a roll. We're going to keep this going. There's always more things to talk about.
There's always something.
That's right. Didn't I hear you're writing something, a book for everyday pet grooming styles. Is that still on the...
Still being worked on. I had it halfway written a few years ago, and stupid me didn't back it up to a disc, and my laptop got stolen.
Oh.
And so I've had to start over. But, yeah, I am still working on it. It's actually called Grooming by Numbers, and it's innovative. And hopefully, if everything goes as planned, it'll be out sometime middle of next year. And it includes, believe it or not, a photo album that you can show to your clients, and they can help pick out heads and see what the different bodies look like on different breeds. It's pretty in-depth. That's one reason it's taking me so long to get it done.
Excellent. And that's going to be like a – do you know what size kind of book? Is it going to be like Notes of the Grooming Table, those kind of books, like a 8.5 by 11 type?
Well, we haven't really decided yet on a print way to go. It would probably have to be about that big, but I definitely am going to put it out on e-book as well as
okay.
possibly a flip book format where you can buy it on DVD or CD and actually use it on your computer. It's a little more cost-effective that way when you're talking lots of photos.
Absolutely. It's that photography. Lots of work with the photography part of doing these books.
Yeah, it gets really expensive, too, when you start talking, putting it into paper version with a lot of photos. So
yeah.
We're going to see how it all works out.
There's a nice thing now, you know, we're with our book, From Problems to Profits. We can now not order like we in the old days. We had to order 500, 1,000. We can do that new print on demand, which really does help with all the cost. You don't have to invest so much into the inventory. You can just tell the printer now, you know, print 2, and they mail it direct. And you know, I'll have to tell you a little bit more about that if you haven't seen.
Yeah,
that
I haven't
wonderful.
Seen. I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
My daughter is pregnant with her fourth child, and that's sort of slowing things down a little bit too. I don't really feel like I'm old enough to have 4 grandchildren, but oh well.
But you are.
It's all you can do is say, yay, we have another baby coming, and then start quilting and buying baby clothes and all of that good stuff.
Why don't you know, not everybody who listens to this show is going to know exactly who you are and everything. Why don't we start with just tell everyone how you got into the grooming?
It's actually a really funny story, and I'll give you the short version. I went through a really nasty divorce back in 1993, and my children went to visit their father in Arizona in that summer, and he didn't send them back and didn't have any money to fight him, so I ended up going to Arizona to get my children back, basically, and couldn't find a job. Had applied at a local kennel and didn't get hired, which I think is kind of funny. They didn't think I had it in me to do the job. And so I was driving a cab, and one day my car broke down. I was driving a 69 Volkswagen camper, believe it or not, and I ended up having to take it to the garage, and on the way to the repair station, it caught on fire. So the police officer brings me and my children back to my apartment, and I was just done with Arizona. I needed to get out of there. There was nothing I could do. I needed to go home. And I went downstairs to call my mother from the payphone, and the payphone didn't work. So kids and I loaded up and started walking to the nearest store, and this guy pulls up beside me in a pest control truck and jumps out and runs around and grabs me by the shoulders. And it's somebody I knew, thank goodness, but he scared the living daylights out of me. And it turns out he was dating the woman who owned the kennel that I had applied for a job with. And he took me out there the next day, and I got hired on to clean kennels and bathe dogs. If the payphone hadn't been broken or the car hadn't caught on fire, I never would have learned how to groom dogs. So fate has a funny way of showing you that what you really think you want, you really don't want.
That's right. Mysterious ways bring you.
It was really crazy. It ended up not being a very good place to work, but I learned a lot about what not to do, as well as a lot of how to groom. I had a really wonderful teacher. Karen was fabulous. The owner of the kennel, not so much. But like I said, I learned a lot about what not to do.
And then, now, how long were you a groomer before you became self-employed?
About 2.5 years.
What can you say about those 2.5 years? Did it sort of end up leading you like, I got to go get self-employed because you don't like what you see or whatever?
Pretty much. Like I said, the first place I worked was a nightmare. I won't get into it, but she lost her kennel and actually lost all of her AKC privileges, too. It was really a bad scene. The second place I worked wasn't a whole lot better, and they didn't have any money to be made. I was really just barely scraping by, making about $200 a week. So I left there, went to another place, and I was there for a year, and I saw a lot of things that made me very sick. A lot of abuse, a lot of stuff that I just couldn't deal with, and I walked out in the middle of the day one day and never went back. I was working for vet clinics, too, and I love that. I think every groomer should have to work for a vet at least part-time sometime. It will educate you so much if you do. You will learn so much that you just will never be able to get anywhere else. But I was working way too many hours and way too hard, so I said, well, we can do it better than what they were doing it and do it nicer and kinder. So I opened my own place. Knowing what I know now, I probably would have stayed working for the vet clinics a little bit longer and gotten a little bit more time under my belt, but it's worked out pretty well.
What kind of place was it that you opened? Was it a small commercial shop?
Yeah, I actually opened a shop in a small strip mall here in town in Albany, Georgia, and I didn't do my research real well on who I was renting from or where I was renting. And that really almost closed me in my first year. I cannot emphasize enough how many people are two people that you need to research your landlord as well as how much you're paying for what you're paying. I was paying way too much for someone who was going to do absolutely nothing for me. And it almost closed me down the first year I was open. But at the end of my one-year lease, I moved into another building, and the landlord there was wonderful. The rent was much more affordable, and it's been almost 17 years now we've been open.
That's a long time. That's great advice, especially for the new self-employed out there, that I kind of shared this as a consultant to them. Like you said, go over with that landlord. Any and everything you're expecting should be in black and white on paper and signed, because they'll just, no, maybe I'm going to do this now, maybe I'm not, and I'm sorry that, you know, you didn't make sure to tell me how much electricity you needed, so I'm sorry, it's going to be your bill for that electricity. All sorts of horror stories come out there, so it is really good to check on that.
With me, my problem with him, it was my air conditioner. The air conditioner was one of the original 1970s air conditioners on the roof, and the coils had rotted out. And he had told me he would pay for that, but in writing, I had to pay for that.
Right.
And that was almost $2,000 that a brand new business does not have that kind of money to pay for. And I had to have it because in Georgia, the Department of Ag inspects us, and if the temperature is above a certain amount, they will close you down. So, yeah, he nearly bankrupted me my first year.
Yeah, I've seen and heard similar stories over the years. And I tell people, you know, we get so used, maybe you've rented an apartment someday from one of those big complexes, and they hand you a nice lease and whatever. And so we think that these leases and all, you know, you've got to sign the one that this landlord presents you. No, every single lease is a negotiation, and we learn by experience. So I usually tell people, take the lease in to your attorney. Don't have an attorney? Get one. You're self-employed now. And say, what's wrong with this document? What isn't being represented in for my rights? And, you know, we've learned through similar experiences that you've had too.
And I would suggest, too, especially if you're new to town, talk to other people who rent from the same people that you're looking to rent from.
Yeah,
and
indeed.
See how they maintain and see if they actually keep their word, because I have even found in the place that I'm in now, if I don't stay on top of them and really harass them about stuff, it doesn't get done. And I did ask, so I knew what I was getting into, but I knew it was going to be a problem when I did it. So being aware is half the battle.
Let me, I'm going to give out, this is a toll-free number for the 48 states. Anyone who's listening live and you're going to want to call in, you just dial 1-877-285-5735. 877-537-3018. I'll say it one more time, 877-537-3018. And you can, what you'll want to do, though, is if you're listening over computer speakers, once you call in, you'll be listening to the show on your telephone. We don't want feedback from your computer speaker, so you'll just be listening to the show on your phone, and it will put you on hold. And what everyone does, once you get dialed in, if you want to raise your hand, you just hit the number 1 on your telephone keypad, and that sends me a signal here that you have a question or comment for Debbie. And then we'll get to everyone as it forms a queue. Now, if you're not in the 48 states, you can call 347-850-8943. These numbers, if you're listening to the show live, will be on your computer screen. If you're listening through your computer, just look up there on the screen and these numbers here. So please give us a call, and I'll connect you with Debbie. All right. Debbie, some of the most interesting blog topics you've done include something like why speed isn't a bad thing. Why don't you tell people about that? We always are in this, you know, got to make money, got to have some speed. Oh, no, speed, you know, you're not going to do as good a groom. Why don't you set people straight a bit on your thoughts on speed?
Yeah, I don't know. I read all the time about people who can only do 5 dogs a day, and I don't quite understand that for established, you know, people that are actually been grooming a while. Yeah, when you're first starting out, maybe, but I don't understand it. And I believe that schools, in a large part, and even experienced groomers, put into people's heads that they can't do any more than that, and if they do, they're going to be sacrificing quality. If you have the right equipment and the right setup in your shop, there's no reason in the world why you can't do 8, 10, 12 dogs a day, or even more in some cases. It's all about how you prepare your dogs, how you keep your client base, and how you schedule your day. People give me a hard time all the time because my shop is so busy. Most of the time we have 2 groomers. Sometimes we have 3. I actually have just hired a 3rd person who used to work for me a long time ago back. Because I just needed some help with overflow. But, I mean, we do 15 to 30 dogs a day, 5 days a week. And I will put our quality up against anybody doing fewer dogs because of how we run the place and because of our equipment. I really think equipment is key to that. Speed is not a bad thing. Speed does not mean sacrificing quality. I read somewhere on Pet Groomer, and I can't remember who said it one time, that the dog doesn't care how fast you're scissoring. The dog doesn't care how fast you're clipping as long as the dog is not being jerked around and moved around chaotically. And that was one of the best explanations I've ever read about that. I work fast. I always have. Everything I do fast. And some people are just built that way. So just because somebody can do more dogs than you doesn't mean they're doing a less job.
I agree. There's a lot of prejudice when it comes to certain numbers. And, you know, it's in the efficiency and the focus of that groomer. I've often said, even on the board, my stepfather was just an amazing groomer, did a lot of dogs for the shows. I mean, handlers were even coming, but he was still even fast then. But he was very focused, and every snip, every stroke counted. Whereas you watch as we begin, and all we'll sort of go 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and 6, and there's just a lot of wasted motion. What comes with time and experience is every move as you groom has a purpose. You know, and it just comes from getting that. And that isn't rushing at all. People say he's that productive. Yeah, he's not rushing. Every stroke, every snip matters.
We had a girl who worked in here who would do, for example, a left back foot, and then she'd go piddle with the head, and then she'd do the right front foot, and then maybe a little bit on the body. And it would take her 3 times as long to do a dog as it takes my new groomer, who's only been grooming 3 years, because she has a routine. We do everything the same way on every dog. And once you get that routine down, the dogs know what to expect. And when the dogs know what to expect, they cooperate a lot more. And speed is just not a bad thing. I've never quite understood why people tend to think it is.
I hear that. As you said, I've heard that for, of course, we grew without intent, but my parents did, a very large business. But we were all hands-on in our days, and large doesn't mean that it's less quality. In fact, we spent more groomer time per pet than most places, and no cage dryers, nothing against them, but that wasn't. Again, it's like, let's not just cut off with prejudices and let's listen to one another. Well, how are you doing that before I make a decision, you know, and come up and say, speed's a bad thing? No. Have you seen it done greatly, properly? Maybe there's something you can get. So,
right. I've had people tell me that if you break it down, that's only 30 minutes per pet. I'm like, it's only 30 minutes per finished groomer per pet, but there are other people in here, and they just, I don't know. I think sometimes you have to live it to understand it. And anybody's welcome to come down and visit. My doors are always open. You're more than welcome to come see how I do things in here.
Well, that's great of you. That's wonderful. Well, let's talk about another problematic topic that is called commission. How do you feel about commissions?
Well, we had this discussion in here Saturday in my shop. My new groomer, Billy, actually works at a vet clinic 2 days a week, and he makes commission there. And in some cases, I think it makes sense. If you're the only groomer or if you're working at a vet clinic, I can see how it would make sense. But I have seen it create more problems than it helps a lot of times, which is why I pay a salary per day. What I found when I did pay commission is people rushed to do more dogs, and then it does become rushing. It does become stressful for dogs and for people. I remember one time someone arguing with me that they were going to do nothing but bath dogs because they could do them faster and they could make more money. I need people to be able to do everything. And then they would argue over who was going to do the bigger dogs that may not pay as much per hour. So when you start having multiple groomers and you're paying commission, a lot of times you end up with fights on your hands. Even if it's just behind the scenes and you don't even know it, people are, you know, they're very disgruntled because so-and-so did more dogs and so-and-so got the easy dogs today. And I just never found it to work for me. It was just not an efficient way to run a business when you want everything running smoothly and dogs done to a high quality.
What do you tell people? They say, you know, I'm hiring a groomer and I'm preparing myself for them to come in. I don't want to pay commission, but the odds are this person that's going to come in, you know, to apply here is going to ask for commission. What do I do? How do I get them to accept not working on commission?
It's rough. In some areas, it's a lot harder than others. The last person who emailed me about that actually did it like last night. And what I told her was just explain to them that this way they're never going to be rushed. You know, you would expect them to do X amount of dogs. If they do more, of course, I bonus out. Now, I did forget that part. If we do an extreme amount of dogs, they're going to get more money because they're going to spend more time here, of course. But you just have to explain to them why it's to their benefit. They're always going to know how much money they're making. Let's say September is slow for a lot of groomers, and I know it is, with back to school. It doesn't matter. The groomers are still going to make enough money. They're going to know what they can pay their bills with. And once you get a groomer accustomed to the idea of, I'm not going to be forced to do a million dogs a day for the same amount of money, once you explain it that way, a lot of times they come around. Billy prefers to work here 3 days a week because he knows how much money he's making, versus the vet clinic where he can go in and have one dog or he might have 30. You never know. It's just more predictable.
I agree. And that's why, you know, the last thing I did for Grooming Business in a Box was to take on the whole subject of wages, just because before I mean, after 52 years in this industry, it's time I better put what I know in something so the future can look at it. And to show that we can even take and agree upon, you're going to do this many pets, you would make this much on commission, I can convert that commission to a salary. You're not going to lose any money by this. In fact, you're going to do the same amount of dogs, but we aren't going to pay by commission. And one of the, having gone into, in the 90s especially, a lot of grooming businesses, to help convert them, there were all these preconceptions. You know, a guy's coming here and he's going to talk about this. And I wanted to show them the numbers, not my opinion. Let's look at numbers. But a lot of them, and you probably have this experience, think that you're going to make more if you're on commission. I just make more money because I'm paid by commission. And isn't that true? That's not always true.
It's not always true. The little girl who works for me, who I've trained from day one, I mean, she came into me knowing how to bathe dogs, and that's about it, has a brand new car. I mean, she couldn't do that on commission because the bank wouldn't have given her a loan as easily as they did with a salary, because they know how much money she's going to bring home every week, and they know she can afford that $500 a month car payment. On commission, I know how hard it was when I was on commission trying to get a car loan. They look at you like you're crazy, because they'll look at you and go, yeah, you made that much this month, but how much are you going to make next month? There's a lot of stability with a salary or even a good hourly wage. And I don't know what we need to do in this industry to get people past the mindset that commission is the best way to go. But commission's not always the best way to go. I would personally rather make a little bit less money a week and know how much money I was going to make than take a chance on commission again.
Yeah, it also distracts. I find one of the most common drawbacks was that whoever had the most seniority, let's say where I have three groomers, would say, well, you're on commission, and I'm on commission. But I have the most seniority, so I get all the dogs that come in for the day first, and I'm going to choose which ones I want. Whatever is left over then is for you. And then the second groomer says, yeah, whatever is left over for you with the least. And it's like, so there is just the tension between
everybody. Creates a lot of tension and a lot of resentment when groomer one ends up with $600 a week and groomer two only ends up with $200 a week, even if they work the same amount of hours. It's just not something I needed to deal with. And in here, too, I find with commission employees, they're not willing to go help another employee as much if they're having a problem, because they're not getting paid to do that.
I agree. Wow.
In here, if Ashley's having a problem, you know, we'll both put our dogs up and go help her. It's not a problem. It just really depends on, I guess, on the shop. In our case, it wasn't a good situation.
I want to invite, we have quite a few callers listening live. I want to remind them you can call 877-537-3018 if you'd like to just give a shout out to Debbie or me or ask a question. You're more than welcome. Please do. There are quite a few callers, listening online. I do see those numbers. Please give us a call. Okay, let's go back a little bit more about your blog.
Yay, I love my blog.
When we came up with that, you came in right away when we made an offer that we were going to do these blogs, and you jumped on the bandwagon. Why did you get on the bandwagon? What did that do for you?
I have always wanted to teach, and I think I'm a pretty good teacher. My mother was a teacher. She actually taught elementary school, and I guess I learned how to teach from her because she taught my kids everything growing up. She taught us everything growing up. And I love to teach, but I don't live anywhere near a school. And I love to write, always have. My high school English teacher in the ninth grade told my mother I needed to learn how to write and that I should be a journalist. And, you know, I ended up being a dog groomer instead. He would be so proud of me right now for the writing that I'm doing, because I'm doing what he told me I should be doing. I love it, and it gives me a way to share what I know. I told Scott Wasserman several years ago, if I knew if I knew back when I started everything that I know now, I would be so much better of a groomer. And if I can help educate the new people out there or the people that don't have access to someone to go into their shop and help them with a technique, that makes my day because I learned all of this the hard way. I mean, I learned it all by myself in a little shop in Albany, Georgia, with no help. And even when I started competing, a lot of the competitors back when I first started were very closed in, and you couldn't get any assistance from anybody. It's not like that as much anymore, but you couldn't get anybody to answer a question or to show you a new technique. And if I can help out with that in any way, shape, or form, I'm all about it. And the blog gave me a way to do that. It gave me a way to get my point of view out there and to help educate young groomers coming up.
And now, 5 years later, you've put a pretty good-sized book or so out there in a lot of and I must say, some of the videos are great because, I mean, look at one of your most popular, because I can see some numbers, not everything, for activity. But like your bandana cutting video and all, that has been referred to a zillion times.
It's crazy that something that simple would bring in that much, you know, that many people to watch. But I taught myself how to do that with no waste because I got tired of throwing away bandana material. Even if it's just 2 inches of material, I felt like I was throwing away something that I paid for, and I don't like to do that. So I'm excited about something, though. My husband found me a new camera. And I'm really excited that should be here in the next 2 weeks. And it actually has, and don't anybody laugh, but it has a head harness. And it's actually designed for motorcyclists and cars to have on steering wheels and stuff, but they come with a head harness. So my arms will no longer be in the way when I'm doing something. You will be able to see what I'm doing the same way I am seeing what I'm doing. And that's one
of
the...
I'm looking forward,
Yeah, that's one of the biggest complaints. One of the biggest complaints I get is your arms were in the way. Is there any way you can videotape this where we can see the whole thing? And the answer really is no. Right now, the camera's on a tripod, and I do my best to stay out of the way. But, you know, sometimes you lose track of where your arms are. With a head harness, and it even has a chest harness, too, so if the head is not going to be the right position, we'll move it down. I won't have to worry about getting in the way of anything. You'll be able to see exactly what I'm seeing, and I think that that's exciting. I was really thrilled that that was happening.
Is this kind of a lightweight thing? You don't have to wear a whole helmet kind of thing.
The camera weighs 2.5 ounces, and the head harness is made out of really lightweight vinyl. So I think the whole thing together weighs 6 ounces, maybe. So, yeah, super lightweight, won't be in the way. It's really a neat idea. When my husband found it, I was really kind of floored because he doesn't usually find good things like that. But usually he has an idea that isn't going to work. I love him to death, though. I really do. He's awesome. He's very supportive. Without him, I couldn't do this. So,
I think, actually, over the years, sometimes, you know, like you said, there's a big difference. Oh, boy, let me tell you, as a consultant out there for many years, you either have a husband that's really supportive or they feel for some reason jealous or demeaned or whatever and all. And I've had some say, but she's making more than I'm making in the family. And I said, great, you know.
My husband retired going on 8 years ago and pretty much stays at home and takes care of the house and the dogs. And he works up here occasionally when we need him to. And for those of you who don't know, I married a client. So.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
I missed that along there somewhere.
He came in the door, and this is a funny story, too. He had a schnauzer named Sasha who was a biter. I was the only one in town that would groom her and didn't get torn up. I don't know why. She never did like me, but she never actually bit me until after we were married. But I didn't actually meet him because I had another groomer working in the shop at the time. And he bounced a check. And that's when I met him. It was the very first check that ever got bounced in my grooming shop.
Wow.
So, yeah. He more than made up for the bounce check. We ended up married about 5 years later.
Isn't that funny? I mean, that's great. Great story.
It's awesome story. I mean, I did hide from him for a while. Tried to get rid of him, but it didn't work, so...
Did you ever come in and do, like, you know, stuff like fill in with like a bather? Can he do even a little bit like bathing to help you out if something came up?
He's a great bather. He's a great fluffer, for lack of a better way to put it. He's a real good pooper scooper. And anybody who's been to the Atlanta Pet Fair in the last few years knows who he is, because he was the puppy dog greeter for years and years at the pet fair. He's the crazy guy that wore the puppy mask at the door. So he's more than just supportive here. He goes with me out of town, too. He's awesome. Don't let him know I said that.
Okay. Now, early on, you know, it was such a big thing in the beginning as a topic and as a technique, and you really took it to the nth degree, and it's always popular on the board and in its own forum. Why don't you tell us how you, when you first started out with wet clipping and your experiences and how you became to love it so much?
Yeah, that I was working at a vet clinic in Eastman, Georgia, and I was getting all of the farm dogs, and this is before Advantage and Frontline. So we had fleas everywhere and ticks everywhere, and I was the only groomer within 45 miles. So I got dogs that had never been done, dogs that had never had a bath, let alone a haircut. And I walked into the door one day, and I had 13 what we called body clips on large farm dogs. And I'm looking at my clippers going, please don't quit on me halfway through. And looking at my blades going, I hope they last through the day, because I knew what I was in for, all the Georgia red clay, all the sand, all the flea dirt. I knew I was in trouble. I called my dad, who was helping me out at the time. This is before I got married. And he came over to the vet clinic and was helping bathe dogs. And I looked up, and he was bathing dogs I hadn't pre-cut. And I'm like, they're never going to get dry. There's no way they're ever going to get dry. Because in the kennel, I had a very small force dryer. I want to say I had a Metro 4 horsepower, little bitty thing. And all we had for dryers was fans. So I was mildly panicked. And he said, well, why don't you try cutting them wet? The hairdresser and the barber cut hair wet all the time. And I did. And it worked. I was really surprised. We got done really fast that day and really, really saved my equipment and saved everything. And we started doing it all the time. A couple of months later on the groomer's lounge, there were some people talking about it, about how they were doing it. And it sort of expanded from there. I wasn't the first one to come up with it. I did find it totally by accident. But when I realized other people were doing it, I didn't feel quite so bad talking about it, because you do feel funny talking about a technique that doesn't go along with what you were taught. So, yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed the heck out of that technique and teaching it to people.
Now, do you require your hired groomers to use it, or did you have to train them and show them, look, it really worked? Was there resistance?
I've only ever really hired a couple of people that I didn't train from the beginning. So everybody that's worked for me has learned this technique because they worked in here. Groomers that have come in, like Teresa, who was fully trained and had her own shop before, look at me like I'm crazy. But once they see how well it works, usually the first thing they're doing with a matted dog is, can I wet shave this one? And I'm like, sure, go ahead. Because it's the easiest way in the world to get the hair off of a dog that's matted.
That's also one of your most popular blog posts that people do search for on that. And, you know, at the time, it's interesting, our business, we had never thought about that, and it just does make so much sense many times today. Just shows you how getting groomers together and networking.
Yeah, and that's it exactly. Curtis Hansey, God love him, encouraged me to do my research on this topic and encouraged me to get out there and put it out there in a seminar format. And he helped me a lot with my research. And it was really funny to me the way I was treated the very first time I gave that class. Believe it or not, got threatened by two clipper companies with lawsuits over it. But, yeah, it was really that rogue. I was an outcast for a while about that one. But that class in Atlanta The first time I did it in 04, we had 260 people, I think, in the first class, and I had to give it again that night to about that many. And it's been given pretty much everywhere. Now, we did have a problem last year at Hershey giving that class, and I'm hoping I get a chance to redo it because the DVD didn't work. But everybody who attends that class, I think, ends up learning that it does indeed work and that there is a technique behind it, and you just have to practice it till you get it just like anything else.
By the way, we mentioned that. Are you this? So this year you are going to be at Hershey and giving something, even if it's not that, is there something else you're presenting?
I'm hoping. Todd and I had a conversation Friday, and he told me that I'm welcome to speak again anytime I want to. I just have to get with him and make arrangements to do something. So I'm hoping it'll all work out and we can get it done. We don't have anything
Great.
Set in stone yet, but, yeah, I'm hoping that it's going to work out the way that I'm wanting it to.
What other techniques do you have, like, we're talking in your business, that you think that are not as common, perhaps, with other groomers that you've really come to,
I think the use of snap-on combs in here, pretty much every dog gets done with at least a snap-on in at least part of its body. And I think they are underutilized. I mean, years ago, they were considered cheating. And nobody taught me how to use them. I had to learn how to use them myself. And they get used on just about every single dog. I think that's important, too. They offer consistency. They offer speed. And I think once you learn how to use them, the world opens up to you in a whole new way.
I agree. Well, yeah. You know, funny story. I remember the first snap-on combs, and I was in high school or something like that, and, you know, my dad was already quite a groomer, my stepdad at that point, and even he, you know, we weren't resisting, they were open-minded, but it was like, gee, what are these, and, you know, and where's this going to go, and there was just the resistance you were talking about. Not from clipper companies like that, but other groomers. It took about 5 years for everyone to get on the bandwagon fully with snap-on combs. And that's where I kind of liked it. I remember I said, that's really good. My parents finally came up and said, look, to people, we're commercial groomers.
Yes.
And if this helps us be commercial groomers and we can do a groom faster, keep our prices in a line, the public's going to like that. Whereas others were saying, you have ruined the art of hand scissoring an entire pet. You know,
yes.
I mean, my mom got some big names in the industry. I remember we're calling about this. What do you think about you're four of them? And you know what? Here's what's funny. I'm not going to mention names, but some of those people within 2 or 3 years later that were so resistant were out making books and videos on how to use these. So it shows you how we react to new things. You know?
That happens a lot. And snap-on combs have come so far, too, from the beginning. I have some of the old Miller's Forge ones that were probably some of the original ones. They called them duck combs, I think. And, you know, there are so many different kinds out there, and everyone has its place. The plastic ones have their place. The stainless steel ones have their place. The ones for the wall trimmers have their place. It's an amazing, amazing tool. I just don't know how people don't know how to use them. But a lot of people still resist them to this day. And they even in the competition ring now, you're seeing people use them to help set lines on poodles and on other breeds. And I think it's amazing. I think it's awesome. They save time. They save your hands. They give you a better, consistent finish. I don't understand why people wouldn't want to use them, but there's still a little bit of resistance to them sometimes.
What about another interesting topic is that you know from our board and is the shaking of the double-coated breeds. Where do you stand on that?
I have pictures that I can show you of dogs that have been shaved consistently for 5 to 10 years whose coat grew back perfectly every single time. And then I have pictures of dogs who have never been shaved that the coat looks as if it has been, and it's mottled and it's thin and it's broken and it's, you know, discolored. I'm not so sure that I think it's a real problem related to clipping. I have no scientific proof of that. I don't think anybody has any scientific proof of that one way or the other. It's a controversial topic. It gets me in trouble all the time. But usually, and people throw up Pomeranians as an example, Pomeranians have a genetic condition called alopecia X, and some people call it black skin disease, where their hair just quits growing and they have irritation, or not irritation, but the skin thickens and it causes the hair follicles to die off. Doesn't matter if the dog was ever clipped or not. It can happen to a full-coated dog. I have a client here in town who has a champion pom who at 6 years old developed this and lost all of his hair, and he had never been shaved. So it can happen. I think most of the time with it, there's an underlying issue. And I have pictures also of a Shih Tzu that was kept in full coat most of his life until recently. And you ought to see the difference in the coat change from having it be clippered to having it be long and full to the floor. It's crazy the difference in his coat right now. So it's not just double-coated breeds. Shih Tzus are not necessarily considered a double-coated breed, but it affects them too. Shaving definitely affects them as well. So I don't know. I'm working on that for a blog post, actually. Keep your eyes open for that one. Yeah, I've got pictures of huskies from shave down to fully grown back out that look absolutely perfect. I've got pictures of palms that have never been shaved. I've got pictures of mixed breeds that have never been shaved, but you would swear they had been. So it's just something to think about.
Do you ever get new customers that say that's why they're coming to you, because another groomer won't do it? Will you?
Yes, it happens. We have a shop here in town that will not do it, or that tells them that if they do it, the coat definitely will not grow back. And I explain, you know, if it doesn't grow back, then there's an underlying issue that your vet needs to look for. And 9 times out of 10, they let me go ahead and do it, and I do it, and I don't have a problem. Now, I do think you can damage the coat if you go too short, so there's a happy medium. You have to know where to go and know, you know, what is too short. But in most cases, you're not going to damage a coat permanently. It can take it a while to grow back in, but it's not going to be a permanent damage unless there's an underlying health issue, thyroid, Addison's, Cushing's, some other kind of skin problem.
In your business, what would you say is the average number of grooming services you provide in an average day?
What do you mean? As far as?
I'd give you like 18 a day on average, or what? How many pets grooming services do you do on average usually in your business?
15 to 30. We average 100 to 150 dogs a week, 5 days a week.
So
15 is a slow day for us. So.
Okay. Now, how do you like to do your scheduling?
We do early morning drop-offs. Yeah, we do block drop-offs. We open at 7:30 during the week and 8 on Saturday, and I like everybody to be here by 10. Now, I have some people who aren't ever here by 10, and we know they're going to be later. And as long as I know that, I work around it. But everybody comes in. Everybody gets bathed if they've got to be wet shaved at that point. One of us is out here doing that while somebody else bathes. Then they all get dried, and then we start finishing them as they come out into the main room. Our first pickup time is usually between 10:30 and 11, and we schedule pickup times based on what works for the owner. If they need to stay all day because the owner's at work, I'm okay with that as long as I know. I tell everybody, I don't care if you come after your pickup time, just don't get here before, and we'll be fine.
And do you tend to, is it the same for you down there that you're open on Saturdays, correct?
Yes, and Saturdays are crazy.
And it fills up quicker, so that's usually your bigger day.
Correct. Believe it or not, Thursdays are our biggest day.
Uh-huh.
I don't understand why Thursdays are so crazy, but this Thursday I already have 18 dogs scheduled, and I don't know why. We used to think it was because people were going out of town. In the summer, I could see it because, you know, they're going to go out of town Friday after work and they don't want to deal with the dogs, so they get it done. During the school year, I don't understand it, but Thursdays stay consistent, and Saturdays. Between Thursdays and Saturdays, we do most of our business on those 2 days.
Interesting. Maybe they just want to have their weekend free, you know,
I don't know. Like I said, I've never fully understood it, but it works.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, and I think because we have our schedule set up for the early morning drop-offs between 7:30 and 10, and we're flexible on that, I think that's helped our business grow. There is a shop here in town that requires you to be there, later than 9 o'clock, and that's a problem for some people who are getting kids off to school. And there's another shop in town that does dogs on the hour drop-off all the way through the day. For my clients, that would never work. And I do think because we are more flexible, we've been able to build up business a lot faster.
I totally agree with you because that's what, we built a very large business. And it was built on accommodating the needs of the client. And, if that meant hiring someone else, say to open early. So we actually, California is one of those huge traffic. I mean, look in Southern California. The average person in Southern California spends 5 hours a day in their car. So they're in this incredible traffic. So we actually even moved, because of that, our opening to 6:30 a.m. drop-offs. Now, we didn't have to be there, but we made sure someone was there. And there was a line at the door.
Said if I opened at 6 o'clock, I would have people from Miller Brewing that have to be at work at 6:30. Procter & Gamble is here. The Marine Base is here. Yeah, if I opened at 6 a.m., I would have a line waiting on me.
Yeah, we certainly did. And that's, because I'll get some newer self-employed groomers. Sometimes it'll say, gee, I'm just not really doing that well booking my days. And one of the first things you got to ask is, what time do you open? 9:30. And I go, everyone's at work. I mean, you have some retirees and people maybe on swing shift, but the majority of the people already have to be at work. How can they come to you midweek? So,
I agree with 100% on that. I don't understand. I could never book an appointment at 10:30 and make it at 10:30 and then be back in an hour and a half or two to pick up my dog. So I built my business based on what worked for me. And if it was going to work for me, I knew it would work for other people. And I'm not saying that you can't build a business that way because people do it. But if you want to build bigger, and then you need to make more accommodations. And
yeah.
I really enjoy being busy. Without being busy, I would go crazy.
I actually find that in our business experiences that there's a certain time as you grow the business, it's actually easier. And no, you've got more employees to supervise. I go, no, it just runs easier because if such and such happens to somebody, I've got more staff that I can accommodate the problem, whatever that is.
If you have one groomer and they get sick, then you have to pick up the slack and groom their 10 dogs. If you have three groomers, then you split up those dogs between three people. I agree with you. There's just a point where it becomes easier to manage. It's kind of like when I had my third child. It was like, okay, one more doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You get to the point you've got a routine down. When you get a routine down, it all just seems to fall right into place.
Yep.
Works pretty well.
Let me. You were mentioning some kind of new post or something you're going to be doing about argan oil. Is that the
That's it.
Okay.
Argan oil is actually a real high-end beauty product that's available for human use, and they have just started. Yves Saint Bernard has a product. Pet Society out of Brazil has a product made with argan oil, and Professional Pet Products, or PPP, also has a shampoo and spray that are argan oil. In April, I loaned my dog Kermit, my Cocker Spaniel that I compete with, to William Galhard, who is from Brazil. And he used an argan oil treatment on my dog that I've been competing with for 6 years. I have never seen his coat feel as good, look as good, or stay as in such good condition as it was when he was done with him. The coat was awesomely smooth, awesomely soft. and it didn't mat up. He went almost a month without being brushed in a bath after he had that treatment put on him. I got to experimenting with it here, and I couldn't find any dog products made out of it, so I was using a human product, and I know that people get all up in arms, but it works. And I've been experimenting here in the shop on all of my full-coated dogs with it, and I will tell you that they dry faster, they look smoother, they come back in less matted, they're a lot easier to get knots out of. And I do a lot of full-coated Yorkies and a lot of full-coated Shih Tzus. And the differences in their coat have just been amazing with this product. So I'm working on getting some before and after photos and doing some video work on how that product works as well for my blog. But it's an exciting new product for us in the grooming industry because there's nothing out there like it.
Great. I'll have to keep an eye on the lookout for that. Interesting.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Tell us now, let's move a little bit out of grooming. Over to your affection for cockers.
Uh-oh.
Tell us about your cockers.
I have had cocker spaniels my entire life. The very first one we ever bought was a mean, nasty black cocker. He's one of the reasons, I don't know, you probably remember, there was a time in not the too distant past, the early 70s maybe, where people wouldn't even groom them. There would be signs on doors that said no black cockers allowed because they had a temperament issue. And I love Skippy. Skippy was an awesome dog. I bought my second one when I was 12 by myself with, believe it or not, going door-to-door selling tomato plants to get the money to buy her. And she was the exact opposite of him. She was a lovey, in-your-face, wanted-to-be-held, little bitty black cocker, and I think she sealed it. I bought my first one as an adult when we came back from Korea. My oldest child, I think, was 7 at the time. So that was 25 years ago almost. And I bought the very first party color I ever saw. I had never seen a party color cocker until I saw Zebby, and I bought her, and the rest is history. It was funny because she wasn't for sale when we went to look at her, but I went home with her. She was supposed to be mine from day one, I swear to you. The people where she was born, the breeder had named all of the puppies after her son's girlfriend, whose name was Debbie, spelled the same way as mine, and she had just changed the first letter. Well, my last name started with a Z, but the guy that I went to look at her at didn't know that because my father had called, and he has a different last name than me. When I looked at the back of the picture and saw that it said Zebby, my dad wrote him a check on the spot, and we carried her home.
Now, because you're have a lot of affection for that breed, has that actually brought you a lot of cockers in as for your clientele?
I do a few. We don't have I used to do a whole lot more. We used to have more breeders here than we do. We really don't have that many cocker breeders in this area anymore. Not sure why, but this area has turned over into little fluff balls. I tell everybody I specialize in little white fluffy dogs because that's what comes through my door more than anything. But when I first opened, absolutely, I would have 4 or 5 cockers a day. But we've lost, like I said, we've lost several breeders in the area that no longer raise them. So it's been good for the breed, to be honest with you, to see the numbers fall. We're not getting the evil temperaments and the nasty ears and the bad skin that we used to see. So that's a good thing.
How do you feel about grooming them? Your employees even, that are your employed groomers, about grooming them? Did they bring any residual?
Not really. I don't think so. I don't think so here because we don't see the bad ones very often. I can't remember the last time I had a really nasty cocker in the shop. And again, I think a lot of it's regional. I think wherever you're at, the genetics are going to play a role in what you're seeing. But we don't see the dogs with the temperament issues. We don't see the peeing, pooping, spent on the table. We don't see any of that. And I think that has a lot to do with how we feel about them in here.
Great.
I can understand if you were in an area where all that was going on, I don't think I'd like to groom them either. So.
Right. Okay, I'm going to bring in one of our callers. And again, anyone who has already called in, if you do have a question, you'll want to just hit number one on the keypad. That sends me a little flash here, and I know that you have a question for Debbie. The one I'm going to release right now, I'll be unmuting you. Just hold for a second. You're in the 203 area code. Hi, this is Steve. Hi. Who is this?
This is Kathy, Oodle J. Poodle's mom. How are you?
Pretty good.
Very
How
good
are you?
One.
I want to thank you, Debbie, for all the help you've given all of us over the years. And I want to talk poodle products.
Okay.
What do you feel that will keep the poodle's hair the straightest once they're dried and sent home?
That's really hard. I think a lot of that is drying technique more than anything.
I use a stand dryer and a high-velocity dryer. I stretch it.
Mm-hmm.
I have five of my own. I have poodles. And mine stay pretty good, but some of the client dogs leave, and they say they're curly in a day.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is genetic. But are you conditioning them at all?
I don't if I'm cutting. If I'm scissoring, I don't. I use a scissoring conditioning spray.
Mm-hmm.
But my own dogs are bathed weekly, and I condition them when they're bathed because they're not always clipped.
Okay, yeah, I was always taught not to use conditioner, and I have discovered that that is not a really good idea for poodles. It really does cause a curl. Some dogs are just going to curl back up, unfortunately, and I know you know that.
Yeah.
I love Stazco spray. I have found the best results with that over just about anything because it's a really light conditioner, but it also does seem to help straighten the coat because of how it coats the shaft of the hair.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not,
I used it. You recommended it, and I bought it.
I love it. I love the way it smells. I love everything about it.
I also just got the shears you recommended from Randy at Precision Sharp when I went to Intergroom this year, and I love those too, the chunkers.
The chunkers are fabulous. Yeah, his chunkers are amazing. I have two pairs.
What's your favorite curve shear?
Believe it or not, I like a Kenchi flipper because you can turn it around either direction.
Okay,
it's got finger tines. Yep, it's called a flipper. It's got finger tines on both sides, so you can turn it with the arch down or the arch up so you can set angulation a little bit better. But something you need to consider with poodles, too, is argan oil. Have you ever heard of the Brazilian blowout for
my
hair?
My son is a hairdresser, so I can have him get it for me.
Yep. Argan oil and keratin oil are the two main ingredients in the Brazilian blowouts that are used for human products. And they do help straighten coats. So
do they really?
They really do. You would be amazed at what my cockers look like. And even on my poodle, the last time I used him in competition, I have a cream toy. And when I used it on him, his coat stayed fluffed for about 4 or 5 days afterwards.
Did it really?
It did.
I have one girl who's cottony, and I really don't like the feel of her fur. And I bet that would do something for
her. He is the same way. He is a cream. He's from a really nice kennel in Texas. But the creams tend to have a softer coat anyway. And, yeah, this stuff has been amazing for his coat. I get a lot of fluff, and I get a lot of straight that's just awesome.
I'll give it a try. I just wanted to basically say thank you for all your help.
Thank you so much. That makes my day.
It's
what I do
it.
This for.
Yep, you help me all the time. I've emailed you, and you've helped me, so I just want to say thank you.
Thank you so much.
Keep it up, okay?
I'll try.
All right, good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, Debbie. How nice.
It is nice. I love hearing that I've helped somebody. It makes my night.
All right. Well, let's look at another subject here, Little, that you sometimes talk about in technique about dematting. What's your attitude on dematting?
I don't think that if it's done right, it has to hurt. You also, though, you really do need to know when to say no. And we usually give about 15 minutes after the dog is dry. If I can't get it out in 15 minutes after the dog is dry, then it's too matted to get done. In the older days when we were brushing out dogs before the bath, yeah, it hurt because you had all of the stuff in the coat and it pulled and it tugged and... Today, with all the products that we have, if you do it right, it doesn't hurt. And it won't even damage the coat if it's done correctly. I raise cockers. I had learned how to demat because of that. Cocker's in full coat, get some mats. There's not much you can do for that. It's just going to happen if you let them be dogs, and believe me, my dogs are dogs. Violet was killing cicadas this afternoon. So, yeah, full-coated Cocker out in the backyard killing cicadas.
Oh,
made
boy.
Me happy. Made me real happy. She was muddy up to her elbows. I'm like, what are you doing? But anyway, if you use the correct brush and the dogs are clean and the dogs are properly conditioned and it won't come out within 15 minutes of being dried, I would shave it. But if you know what you're doing and you're using the proper tools, there's no reason why dematting has to hurt a dog. None. It can be done quickly, efficiently, and effectively without hurting a dog if you know what you're doing. I got yelled at not long ago for saying that, so.
Well, you know, that happens.
Yeah.
So what do you tell your customers? That you the service fees are based on number of minutes? If you're going
based on how long it takes us to do it. If it comes out, you know, while we're drying a dog, and most of the time if a dog is going to be dematted, by the time I have that dog dry, they're dematted. Maybe 1 or 2 minutes afterwards, but, you know, pretty much as I'm drying them, I'm getting the knots out. If that doesn't work, I will pick up the phone and call them and say, I'm sorry, this isn't going to work. I had a lady on Friday, I think it was, might have been Saturday, come in with a dog. It was Saturday. And she didn't know what matted hair was, so I had to show her. Like, this is not coming out. No matter what we do, it's not coming out. And she was very upset because the other groomer had dematted her dog before without explaining to her what was going on, apparently, because she said he was worse than this the last time. I'm like, well, I won't do it. So you have to know when to say yes and when to say no, too.
Exactly. How much of your work today on grooming is done with cordless versus corded clippers?
I don't even know where my corded clippers are. I really don't. I would have to go look in a drawer somewhere for my corded clippers. I use a mini, actually it's a Crow Mini. I had a mini Bravura and it died. So now I'm using a Crow Mini made by Wahl, a Bravura for most of my work. And I have an Oster Volt. I use all of those. I wouldn't know where my regular clippers were.
And do you find them just that it's more comfortable? You don't feel the drag of the cord on it? Is that what part of the traction is?
That's part of it. I have had probably some of the worst wrist problems in the world. Before I started dog grooming, I had a wrist fusion on my left wrist. This is going to sound crazy, but I delivered Boston Globe newspapers for years, and for 3 or 4 years, and just the wear and tear of the paper on your wrist, because those are heavy and they're bulky, broke my wrist down to where there was nothing really left supporting it. So I had a partial wrist fusion done, that was about 25 years ago, and my right wrist, I've had a thumb fusion on the left hand as well from stretching out the ligaments and just tearing it up from holding on to dogs. Really, that's my holding hand, so it's the hand I grip with. My right one's in the same shape. 5 or 6 years ago, I really thought I was done grooming because I was having so many hand problems. And thank goodness for a great massage therapist, because he was able to teach me how to do self-massage and how to work out the knots, and he's done it for me as well. But, yeah, you need light, you need efficient, and the cordless clippers of today are nothing like the cordless clippers when I first started. They weigh very little. They put less stress on your hand. And because you don't have the weight of the cord getting in your way that you're trying to maneuver around, just a whole lot easier. I even use a Bravura with my VAC system. So. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. It's pretty much the only clipper I use is my Bravura.
Hey, when does your holiday season really kick in?
It's going to be a weird season this year. We will start seeing people the end of October getting dogs done for Thanksgiving, believe it or not. And they'll usually get a full groom like the last 2 weeks of October, so I really only have about another month before this is all fixing to start here. But we will start seeing them in the end of middle of October for a full groom. And then the 2 weeks before Thanksgiving, the way, if everything goes the way it's been going in years past, we'll start doing a lot of baths and brush and feet, face, and tail grooms. Last year it was the exact opposite. Last year it was a lot of feet, faces, and tail in October and grooms in November. People here tend to decide, and I don't know if it's the same everywhere because I haven't really worked anywhere else as a dog groomer, but we have 1 year where Thanksgiving is really crazy and 1 year where Christmas is really crazy. And this year it should be November is really crazy. It's like they alternate where they're going for Thanksgiving or Christmas, and the dog has to be done for that.
Do you work with your just full crew? Do you schedule them more? Do you actually even sometimes bring in some extra help?
I have been known to call my husband and go, we have 32 dogs on the schedule. Can you come help? And currently, Billy, who's working for me, has a partner who's also learning how to groom. So if we come down to it, we can have him come in and help. So,
yeah,
I'm not going to work us to death. When we get to a certain point, we're done. And Ashley is training barrel horses, and she has to be out of here by a certain time to work those. And I don't like to work past a certain time either. I think once you get past a certain time, you no longer are putting out your good work. So, yeah, we will do our best to try to keep it all under control and organized.
All right. You going to any other trade shows besides Hershey?
Am I going to any? I'm going to Fun in the Sun, and I'm going to the Fun in the Sun in October.
Uh-huh.
I'm hoping to compete. So if you guys are there, come by and say hi. I don't bite. Hoping to be there with three dogs. We'll see how that all goes, if my arm is any better by then. I tore a collarbone muscle a few months ago and still having some issues with that, but hopefully I'll be there for that.
Some of our listeners probably haven't become a competitive groomer. What attracts you to go into the competition angle of grooming?
When I first started, it honestly was because I thought I was better than I was. I really thought I could go out there and win, and once you get out there and you start getting critiques, you realize you're not as good as you thought you were necessarily. But it pushed me to get better, and it pushed me to get faster. And because you only have X amount of time, your dogs will be done to show specs in that allotted time. And if they're not, you don't get any credit for what you're doing. But I also learned an awful lot about coat care, how to take care of coats, how to keep dogs in coat. I've learned so much doing it, and that's one of the things I absolutely love doing. I went to the show in Tennessee this year. It's the only show I actually competed at this year. And talking to Terry DiMarino about my poodle, I realized I'm not really poodly challenged, which has been my line forever. I really do know what I'm doing. I just need a better poodle. So, you know, the things like that. When you think you don't know what you're doing, but you figure out you really do, everything is wonderful at that point. It will push you to become a better groomer.
Exactly, it will. That's a very common thread, is that many will say that they have the realization like you. It really helped them to become a better groomer by participating in competition.
It really has. And I have met some of the most wonderful people, become friends with some of the most wonderful people. It's an amazing experience, something I think everybody should do at least once.
So we've got just a couple more moments here. This has been a great hour speaking with you, very informative. I'm sure to be very popular. It's been pretty amazing, by the way, to the folks that have been listening to the shows that, well, we just started this about 6 weeks ago, moving over to Blog Talk Radio, and we've had today, we're quickly approaching the 8,000th listener to the archives. So that's not bad for just
that's
that
fabulous.
Again, and there really is a great avenue of, again, spreading good information like this, making a difference in other groomers. Too often we don't even talk to other groomers in our same area, you know, the silliness of all that competitive.
People here won't talk to me. Yeah, people in my hometown will not talk to me. I don't know why. They'll see me and go the other direction.
Yeah.
But I know two of them read my blog, so go figure.
Yeah. Well, anything else you want to share with people today that's gone on?
I think that's about it. I just want you all to make sure that you keep checking back with my blog, because there's a lot of exciting and new things coming up. I'm working on an awful lot of things all at once. I've got about 10 articles in the works right now. If I can ever get all the pictures and video clips done for them, they'll be up. And please, if there's something that you want to see, email me and let me know, and I'll see what I can do. I can't guarantee it, but I'll sure enough give it a shot. And if I don't know anything about it, there are other bloggers who do, and I can put you in touch with them.
Great. Just a reminder to those of you listening, the blogs can be accessed from the message board Groomer Talk at petgroomer.com. You can go direct too. It's pretty easy to remember. It's groomwise.com. And Debbie, what's the name of yours again?
Grooming Smarter.
Grooming Smarter. You just click the banner, and there's a search engine, so you can, if you're looking at a topic, you know, she's got 5 years worth. You don't have to start at 2008. Just use the search engine, put in a few keywords, and it'll help identify those blogs that relate to what you're looking for. And I'm sure we're going to continue on into next year with Grooming Smarter.
I hope so.
So, Debbie, I want to thank you. Thank you for all your contributions with the blog and to the message board every day. I know I start the early morning, as early as 3 in the morning, I get on my time, which is 6 a.m., your time.
Mm-hmm.
And there, you've always go through what's happened through the night and have some comments out there for people.
I try not to, but it's really hard not to sometimes.
No, that's what it's for. That's what it's for. It's a place of discussion. That's what it's for.
Yeah, and there are nights when I can't sleep. It actually keeps me going, gives me something to do.
Right. Well, I want to thank you again, and everybody, thanks for listening. And in 2 weeks, we'll be back again with our next show. Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you. Have a great night, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.